거기다 담아서 전주기 여러지 제가 둘 세지 되는 주지가 용기 되는 주기 되는 이제 나네 다 텐지 되는데 진짜로 좋아 그래서 알아가서 그래 텐지 되지 유자지 상대방 선수들 먹는 거 시작된 거지 되네 최주에서 통과당 자료 봐 최주에서 통과당 자료지 김종호 두 사람 노선이 뭐였다 황도 진서를 잘 텐지든 유지샤 용기든 다같이 용기든 세금은 용기든 주인족이 용기든 원해 됐단다 단전세 어떤 말이야 와 대주
So studying the commentary to the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life as presented by Gyaltsub Jay under these four topics, which is explaining the meaning of the title as we went through yesterday, the etymology of the Sanskrit title, Bodhisattvacharya Avatara, and then the translator's homage, in which under which you have the praise and the homage and the pledge or the commitment to the writing. And then the third topic under which Gyaltsub Jay presents this is the third topic is the main subject matter. And then the fourth topic is the meaning of the conclusion of it all. So today we will begin with the third topic, which is explaining the main subject matter of the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which begins with the fourth stanza referring to the perfect human rebirth.
Then, 산지기 변호사는 제시 쥐어받을 법이 주유스. 나도 아는 집을 지나 대육대는 힙을 내리지, 구워, 힙을 내리지, 중무여서 해야지. 힙을 내리지, 중무여서는 오늘에 집을 종어당, 통물 맞으시고, 리더 통물 맞으시고, 집을 집이 나는 용으로 가. 나 쥐어주고 왔대, 때려버려 놓았다. 대육대는 힙을 내리지, 구워, 나 뒤바지. 다들마 해부 제단에 주소 말고 어떻게 생기게 변화성과 변화성 생기 되는 제세 주식으로 소비 주시 주식을 소비 주는 다들 디바샤블로 오던 바벽을 오던 아니 전주를 오던 저비를 오던 어떻게 그런 데 있어 말이야
So usually when the main subject matter is introduced, you have the general introduction, and then you have the individual explanations. So the general introduction was what was introduced on day one of Rinpoche's teachings when we went through what each one of the topics or each one of the chapters the topics that it specifically dealt with. So the general introduction was covered the first day, introducing you to the main topics of each one of the chapters, and then now we go to the individual explanation of the respective chapters. And so the first chapter, explaining the benefits of the bodhicitta mind. So this begins with the way in which the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life is presented. It's very similar to the Lamrim, the graduated path to enlightenment, beginning with a exalting you to take the essence of one's perfect human rebirth, so encouraging you, enthusing you to take the essence of the perfect human rebirth. And how to take the essence of one's perfect human rebirth in the Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life is by understanding the incredible benefits of generating bodhicitta, and that is how you take the essence of one's perfect human rebirth. In the Lamrim presentation, you have, from exhorting you to take the essence of the perfect human rebirth, then you have the actual method of taking the essence of one's perfect human rebirth, which is actually making one's life meaningful, and that is through engaging in a path and practice which is common to an individual of the smallest intelligence or smallest capacity, engaging in a path and practice that is common to an individual of the medium capacity, taking the essence of one's perfume rebirth by practicing the path and practice of the highest intelligence, highest capacity. So that is how it is done in the context of the Lamrim. But after exhorting you to take the essence of the perfect human rebirth, then how to take the essence of the perfect human rebirth in accordance with the Bodhisattva Vichara Avatara is by, enlightening you to the fact of the incredible benefits of the bodhicitta mind, then taking essence by engaging in the bodhisattva's way of life. And so how to engage in the bodhisattva's way of life is first and foremost, then beginning with, purification, then, cultivating conscientiousness like this, and then you have the respective chapters on cultivating enthusiasm, cultivating tolerance, so forth. So, actually the essential meaning of the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life is very much, similar or totally accords with the Lamrim, the Graduate Path to Enlightenment. When the fifth Dalai Lama, taught on the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, he taught it in conjunction with the Lamrim, which is known as, the oral transmission of Manjushri. There's one presentation of Lamrim under that title. So he taught the entire, Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life based on the outlines of that particular Lamrim. So you can say, this text in essence contains the entire meaning of the graduated path to enlightenment.
我觉得那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那个那
So the fourth and the fifth stanza which says leisure and endowments are very hard to find, and since they accomplish what is meaningful for man, if I do not take advantage of them now, how will such a perfect opportunity come about again? Just as a flash of lightning on a dark cloudy night for an instant brightly illuminates all, likewise in this world, through the might of the Buddhas, a wholesome thought rarely and briefly appears. So this is relating to, you know, perfection and rebirth, and kind of enthusing you, exhorting you to take to take the essence of the perfection and rebirth, which basically is to make your life meaningful.
That dangerous alone, that was in two to one of competing, 대상 인상 대유된 추조보다 무호비 무호 추조보다 무호비 제 무호가 제단 대유된 인상 대유된
성문도 So when we talk about the leisure or the freedom, it usually refers to having the leisure, having freedom to practice Dharma, you know, to develop one's mind in Dharma. That is the leisure that has been referred to. And what it specifically refers to is the fact that we are free from those eight states of existence in which we lack that kind of freedom, lack that kind of leisure to practice the Dharma. So, just like how it is stated in the, you know, when you do the confession of the Bodhisattva's downfall, you know, like the recitation of the names of the 35 Buddhas, and then as you do the prayer following the names of the Buddhas, you know, there's the list of these eight states of existence that lack the freedom, first amongst them being, you know, if one was to be reborn in the hell realm, where one is completely tormented by such extreme suffering that one has absolutely no opportunity, no freedom, no leisure to practice Dharma. In the hell realm, you go through such extreme sufferings of heat and cold that, you know, the thought that no thought of Dharma ever occurs in the face of such a great suffering. In the same way, if we are born in the preta realm, in the hungry ghost realm, then you have extreme sufferings of hunger and thirst. Being born in the prayer realm, then you have outer obscuration, inner obscuration, obscurations that are a combination of both inner and outer, which completely take away from oneself the opportunity to practice Dharma. And then if you are born as an animal, then you can see as being born in the animal world, then how one does not have the opportunity to develop the mind in Dharma. And you can see that for yourself in the lives of the cats, the dogs, the birds, and all the creatures that are in the sea, and most of the beings that are born in the oceans. You know, the extreme stupidity, foolishness as being born in animal realm, then you have one has absolutely no opportunity for Dharma or practice. That you can see for yourself directly. If you try to teach a cat how to recite Om Mani Padme Hum, you won't have much success. In fact, you might get bitten in the end.
What Bana derga düzü derla üyüvetine den var kadı yine çiçsene derla yutabu ise seyacı yoru var. Çözü yuma zeva yina hem çöz dasa yutu üyüreyiz. Çöz madasa yutu zöyle yutabu la kuruz. Yutabu zice sonra çöz çöz koyar mesela lobal zeva yina hem çöz anyol koyar mesela hani çöz lobal kuma yuma kuma seyacı yoru var.
So then being born in outlying regions, so that usually refers to what it means is being born in a place where you have no exposure to even a word of the Dharma, you know. So that is what it means in actuality. But outlying regions has two connotations. Geographically, then, you know, what is considered as a central place, as opposed to an outlying place, yes, like, you know, there's a certain distance, a certain area of starting from Bodh Gaya. Then after a certain distance, then geographically, then it's considered outlying region. Then the other way you can understand outlying region is any place where you do not have the existence of the Dharma teachings. And then there is a being born as a barbarian. It says, in other words, what it means is having completely wrong views. So it, that can be like you can be in the middle of a central place where Dharma is flourishing, but as long as our mind is consumed in wrong views, then you know it means nothing to be born in a central place like Bodh Gaya, like that. You know, like you can say like Mao Zedong, you know, he's born in a country where Buddhism existed, but you know, it's, but for, you know, you would say falling in the category of being a barbarian in the sense of being consumed by wrong view in relation to what you know, spiritual development. So another place, another state of existence, you would regard as a lacking the freedom, lacking the leisure to practice Dharma. Is why if one is born as a long living god, which usually refers to a birth in the fourth level of the of meditative absorption, sumekhamba, right? Sukhamba, sumekhamba. Like it's in the form realm, in the fourth, there are four levels to it. It's the fourth level where, you know, the mind has completely stopped any kind of awareness of shape, form, color, and so forth. So beings who are born in that level of existence, the only awareness that they have is the awareness of being born and the awareness of dying. So other than these two states of awareness, no other awareness has ever occurred. You know, the mind is not activated in any way. So so therefore it is regarded as a state of existence which is completely lacking the opportunity to practice Dharma.
Now,
And then the other is, you know, even if we are born as a human being, then when we experience extreme mental and physical defects, so that, you know, one is, you know, completely, you know, one completely loses the opportunity to practice Dharma, you know, whether it's being deaf or dumb or, you know, kind of extreme physical and mental defects, and by that particular defect, then losing out on the opportunity to practice Dharma. No. And then, you know, having wrong views, where you know that where you do not accept there is no Buddha, there is no Dharma, there is no Sangha. So, because of these views that you hold, then you do not have the freedom or the leisure to practice Dharma. So by saying that that we have a human rebirth which has all this freedom, which has all this leisure, what it means that, you know, one is not in the hell, one is not in the hungry ghost, one is free from all these eight states of existence. And so therefore, it is a very precious, extremely valuable state of existence that one has. In fact, much more extraordinary than even a wish-fulfilling jewel, to be blessed with these eight freedoms. It's so precious that it's even much more than having a wish fulfilling jewel. So again, to be free of all the obstacles, but you know, this is not sufficient because you also need to have all the positive conditions as well. Besides being free of the obstacles, one needs all the conducive conditions as well. So it's just like, you know, it isn't sufficient preparing a field by getting rid of all the obstacles to, generating a good harvest. One also needs all the conducive conditions to ensure that harvest, such as the water, the manure, the air, the sunlight, the heat, all of that, all those positive conditions must be there to ensure that harvest. So in the same way, it isn't sufficient to be free of these eight obstacles that gives us the freedom, but one also needs the endowments, these type of richness in our life, which enables us to make our life meaningful.
So the ten
endowments, five must come from one's own side, and five are dependent on others. The five endowments that first five endowments that must come from our own side is the endowment of, you know, being born as a human being, being born in a central place geographically, or like, you know, where the Dharma teachings are available, and then, you know, having complete mental and physical senses intact, so one has no shortcomings in that kind of way, and not having committed any of the heinous uninterrupted negative karmas. And the fifth being having faith in the three vast collections of the teachings.
So
these are five endowments are what Nagarjuna states in his writing known as the Letter to a King.
So the second
set of five endowments that for which we depend on the outside are like, you know, the endowment of the Buddha descending. Even though we are not living in a time frame where you have the actual presence of a Buddha, but we do have spiritual teachers, virtuous friends, who represent the actual Buddhas in the scope that they teach whatever the Buddha taught, you know. So in that way, even though we don't have the presence of an actual Buddha, then we can, we have an equivalent in the sense of our spiritual teachers. Then it isn't sufficient that the Buddhas have descended in our world, but they must, there's a need that they have taught the Dharma. Because they can descend in the world, but not particularly teachers. So, Buddha's descending, them having taught the Dharma, turned the wheel of the Dharma, and then the third being, the existence of the teachings, even though here, you don't have an actual Buddha actually teaching the Buddha, actually turning the wheel of Dharma, or actually teaching, but you have, representations of the Buddha in our spiritual teachers, who teach the Dharma. And, we live in a time frame, which is considered to be within that time frame of the teachings of the Buddha still existing. We are not in a time frame where the teachings of Buddha is said to be, to completely destroy. So we are still living in this generation where the teachings of Buddha is considered to be existent. And then, you have you have all the scriptural teachings of the Buddha still existing, and you have also the experiential realizations of those teachings still existing like that. And so then you have the fourth, which is the presence of the followers of these teachings, people who there being the presence of individuals who are still very much engaged in the practices of these teachings, who still follow in the footsteps of this teaching, very much engaged in these teachings, that we can look up to, that that we can use as our model. So that's the fourth one, that there is still this kind of engaged practice of the teachings, or that there are still in the existence of those who live in the footsteps of these teachings. And the fifth endowment is the endowment of receiving all the support in our Dharma practice, that we still live in a generation where people appreciate Dharma practice and support us in our Dharma practice. So you can say that all these five external endowments are still present in our life today. And so therefore, we can say that we are blessed with these 18 attributes. So in this way we have the 10 endowments, the 5 internal endowments and the 5 external endowments. So this shows that we cannot do without the outer conducive conditions for our Dharma practice. Even if we are free of all the obstacles, we still need the richness of these resources, of these outer and inner conducive conditions. It's just like when you plant a seed. It isn't sufficient. Just planting. Besides the seed that you have, then you need the good soil. You need the water, you need the manure, you need the heat, and you need all these conducive conditions to ensure that this seed will germinate like that. In the same way, it isn't sufficient for us to be free of all the obstacles. One must be blessed with these endowments to be able to make one's life meaningful.
Debo kanga jula ten je bore sen debo yinsa yin che dala jula ten jula ten ten de su jujen la ten de yuwa jujen la ten de yuwa chu druwa de yan debo yinsa ko jujen la ten de yuwa rang ne tu je da je ju ma de tu je ko zo ma ta wo sa ma de
so all results, all fruits are dependent upon causes, Our Dharma practice is also a result, it's a fruit, and so therefore it is dependent upon causes and conditions. So it is dependent upon internal causes and conditions, external causes and conditions. When you have these conducive conditions complete, then it will ensure our Dharma practice. So, this is the kind of dependent arising which is dependent on causes and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
These five external endowments were taught by the Indian master Thome Asambo Asanga when he presented the Sadenga, means like the five grounds, and in the, when teaching the grounds of the hearers, then he taught these five external endowments. So because our human rebirth is blessed with these eight freedoms and ten richness or ten endowments, then which is in our hands, then it is a very precious thing that we have at hand to practice Dharma. Blessed with these 18 attributes, then our mind is especially empowered to practice Dharma. Especially powerful to practice Dharma, and so one should make use of this opportunity. So our human rebirth, when we look at it from one perspective, it's like an enemy, because you have this human rebirth, you have all the sufferings, of birth, aging, sickness, death. It's because of this body we have that. But on the other hand, then, if you look at it from another perspective, then it is something really precious, really valuable. Precious and valuable, because on the basis of this, we have the opportunity to accomplish so much, to accomplish such great benefit or great meaning. And so that is how it is stated in Ari Deva's 400 stanzas. And so seeing this, then it becomes essential that one takes care of this body, that one ensures the long survival of this body through taking care of food, taking care of it in the way of its sustenance, of food, medicine, all of that, because it gives us the opportunity to accomplish so much virtue on the basis of having a human rebirth.
A perfect human rebirth like this, blessed with these 18 attributes, the 8 freedoms, the 10 endowments, is an extremely difficult opportunity to come by. It's a rare occasion that we come across such a rebirth as this. Why is that? It's because you know, it's difficult to come by because of its causes. By way of a number, by way of a comparison of numbers, you can see how it is rare. And by way of example, it says by way of nature, by way of example, you can see very clearly how it is a rare opportunity. So, what are the causes for bringing forth a perfect human rebirth? What are the causes for that is, you know, pure morality, you know, and stainless pure forms of prayers and the support of the practices of the six perfections. Because these are the causes for a perfect human rebirth, and since it is difficult for us to accumulate such as these causes, then we say, you know, the opportunity of a perfect human rebirth is extremely difficult to come across. The result is difficult. So, when we look at the activities of our body, speech, and mind, then you have, you know, the virtuous activities of our body, speech, and mind, and then you have non-virtuous activities of our body, speech, and mind. So, when we accumulate negative karmas, we accumulate negative karmas that are great, middling, and small. How do negative karmas that we, non-virtuous activities of our body, speech, and mind categorized as negative karmas come to be categorized as great, middling, and small? Is when we have the motivation, when we have the action, and when we have the completion. When all of these three are complete, then the non-virtuous activity becomes a negative karma classed as the great one. When of those three, only two are present, you know, just the motivation or the action, not the completion, like that. When only two of the three parts is present, then that negative karma of that particular non-virtue becomes categorized as a middling one. And if of the three parts, if you have just the motivation, just one part, then it becomes categorized as a negative, a small negative karma of that particular non-virtue. And so, whenever you accumulate great negative karma, that brings effect in the hell realms. A middling negative karma brings result, rising result in the hungry ghost realm. And the small negative karmas bring result in the animal realm. So, for example, you know, when out of anger we kill an insect, you know, it can be out of anger, or it can be also out of attachment you kill, or it can be out of ignorance that you kill, then you know the particular insect's life is ceased or dead, and at the end of the action, you become kind of satisfied, kind of feel happy that you took care of that. And so here you have an action where you have the motivation, action, and the conclusion all complete. So that karma will bring rebirth in the hell realm. But say you had the motivation of anger, attachment, and then you killed, but you didn't kind of rejoice about the action or feel any kind of satisfaction about having done it, then you have a two-part, and so therefore you are born in the, that karma will bring rebirth, or in the hungry ghost realm, in the pressure realm. And then, of course, if you have just one part, then of the three parts, then that karma still brings rebirth in the animal realm. Then, on the scale of virtue, then you can say, when you're about to kill something, then you feel a sense of compassion for the thing that you're about to kill. You feel a sense of compassion, feeling for the suffering of this, and feeling that, this sentient being wants as much happiness as I want, does not want the suffering that I do not want. So, with that kind of compassion, then one abstains from the act of killing, and then at the end of it, then one feels really happy that one is able to do that. So here you have a virtuous action, you have the motivation, you have the actual action, and of not killing, and the rejoicing. So that kind of a virtuous action usually brings rebirth in the Deva realm, in the celestial God realm. And then of those three parts, if you have just two parts, then that brings rebirth in the hungry, in the Asura realm, the demigod realm. And then if you have just one part, then that brings rebirth in the human realm. So you see, it is through abandoning of the merit that we accumulate, through abandoning these 10 non-virtuous actions. It is through such ethics that one is ensured of the rebirth in the higher states, or in the happier migratory realms of existence as devas, celestial beings, as human beings. So the merit that arises out of our ethics, virtue of our ethical living, that is the primary factor for higher rebirth. Then for a perfect human rebirth, besides this, then one needs pure support of the pure, stainless forms of prayers, and the support of the practices of the six perfections. So when you look at these examples, then you can see how easily we accumulate the karmas that bring us rebirth in the lower suffering realms, and how easily we create the karmas to be reborn in the higher rebirths, in the state of the higher rebirths. So when we talk about, you know, upper fishumri birth, is also the result of you know, the support of pure stainless forms of pure prayers and the six perfections. You can see that in this life, you know, I mean, due to ethics, you have a human rebirth. And then to have a human rebirth in which you have all the basic means to living, you know, all the food and food, clothing, shelter, all the basic necessities for one's survival, to have the access to all of these comes as a result of past generosity. So it is morality that ensures higher rebirth, it is generosity that endows us with all the material resources, and it is a tolerance of patience that endows us with a body which is extremely beautiful. Due to enthusiasm, joy in virtue, then your human rebirth is very powerful. You know, blessed with power, potential, magnificence, like, you know, like that, you know, as you know, why you have individuals that have such so much power or so much so much potential? It's because of past merit of joy in virtue. And due to meditating on concentration by through the merit of having meditated on cultivating concentration, then our minds are much more subdued, you know, not easily disrupted or disturbed. Mind more subdued is a blessing of the merit of having trained the mind in concentration, even though one might not have totally reached like single point of concentration, but due to having made efforts at cultivating concentration and the merits that arise from such efforts, then blesses us with a mind which is, you know, calm, peaceful, subdued. And then as human beings, we have people with different levels of intelligence, you know, some very sharp, some mediocre, some not that sharp, you know. Where does that difference come from? Difference comes because of the different accumulations of merit with regards to cultivating wisdom, perfection of wisdom. So depending on how much of the merit of wisdom one has accumulated, and accordingly, then we get blessed with a mind state, a human mind state, which is very, very intelligent or medium or minor. So besides all these, then, you know, you need the support of the pure stainless prayers. What this refers to is making all these wonderful prayers to have a perfume rebirth, to be able to develop oneself in Dharma practice. So, you know, there must be the support of these pure sinless prayers, dedicating all these virtues, you know, to you to bring it all together like this.
So
when we talk about you know, a perfume rebirth being extremely difficult to find because of the causes, it is for these reasons. By number, then seeing how the perfume rebirth is very rare, you see, you know, compared to beings born in the number of beings born in the Deva realms, in the celestial god realms, then compared to them, then there are many more human beings. Compared to the human beings, then there's many more beings born in the animal realm. Compared to the beings born in the animal realm, then there's many more are the number that is born in the hungry ghost realm. And compared to that number, then much more are the number of beings born in the hell realm. So like that. So these are all very easy for our mind to comprehend. It is easy also for us to understand by way of example, how our perfume rebirth is very, very rare. So in general, when you look at the presentation of the six types of existence, the six realms of existence, then you can see how that is a possibility, because depending on non-virtue, depending on native karmas, great, middling and small, you have hell realm, hungry ghost realm, animal realm, and depending on the merit of virtue, great, middling and small, you have the god realm, the demigod realm, and the human realm. So, it gives us the idea of the possibility of such different states of existence, depending on the strength or weakness of our merit or non-virtues. Where it says in the second line, since they accomplish what is meaningful, in other words, it's saying that our human rebirth has great potential. And what is this potential it is referring to? Is the, as a human being, we have the potential to secure for ourselves for the future lifetimes, for the infinite future lifetimes. You know, if we want to stop rebirth in the lower realms, you know, we can do so with the, our present human rebirth has that capacity to stop rebirth in the lower realms. If we wish to attain higher rebirth as human beings and as devas, then it is within our potential to secure that. So in that way, we say a perfume rebirth is able to accomplish what is meaningful for us.
And so
because of the kind of the intellect, that our human rebirth offers. So we have the opportunity to train in ethics, concentration, wisdom, higher training ethics, higher training concentration, higher training wisdom, so that we can attain liberation as well. And by utilizing our mind's capacity to meditate on the two bodhicittas, then we can attain enlightenment as well. By depending on the part of the mantrayana or tantrayana, by meditating on the deity, then we can employ the skillful means of the method and wisdom during the self generation, front generation, and quickly actualize enlightenment as well. So it is for all of these given reasons we say that our human rebirth, perfect human rebirth, is much more extraordinary than even a wish-fulfilling jewel. You have this mythological jewel which fulfills all our worldly wishes. And so, even if you had a wish-fulfilling jewel like that, no matter how much it fulfills for us, it is able to fulfill our wishes only in terms of this lifetime. Whereas with our perfect human rebirth, then we can take care of not only the purposes of this lifetime, but also the infinite future lifetimes. This ability to become enlightened within one lifetime, one body, is only possible with a perfect human rebirth. Even though this human rebirth is so very precious and so very valuable and meaningful, but one must understand that this is completely impermanent, completely transient. And so therefore, if one is not careful to make use of it while one has it, then one must realize that this is not going to last forever, that one will not have a perfect human rebirth all the time. So that is what is stated in the following line: if I do not take advantage of them now, how will such a perfect opportunity come about again? One cannot, if one does not make use of the perfect human rebirth that one has right now, then one cannot come across these types of opportunities of such perfect human rebirth over and over again.
Jalana, tatabi tanı matu gawa roya na lu de to wa chi bo tan chi chu chi sa je chi lo la de ne yo ma re ma tu ta ba ta ba yo ma su lo se pa de pa na che da te mu ma na je wo na lo ju ke ji ra na ta ba de de ji so wo tu pa ya ma ka pa lo
so on the next stanza says that you know the opportunity of our the occasions when we have perfumery birth and the occasions when our mind gives rise to a virtuous thought is as rare and as fleeting as the flash of a lightning in the dark of the night. You know, when there's a flash of a lightning, then for that one instant, then it illuminates everything. You know, we're able to see everything in the dark, and it's just there for an instant, and next moment it's gone. So like that are the, you know, like that. Like that is the occasions when we have a perfume rebirth. Like that are the occasions when our mind gives rise to a virtuous thought. And this is attributed to being, you know, due to the blessings of the Buddha. So the next stanza is talking about the benefit of bodhicitta. Hence, virtue is perpetually feeble, the great strength of evil being extremely intense. And except for a fully awakening mind, bodhicitta, by what other virtue will it be overcome? So in other words, it's saying there's no greater way, no greater force of purification than the force of the mind of bodhicitta.
Or the data de gwanya to nila ta 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 tesam de de la maso gwa to to ngoro bi chunchu shi to ju chunchu le yes de ba zu jira de de cha no kondo de 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 to ne de ba jira to chu le yes de de tu se de ju ta zu zo je ne ani sha ju se mo ya o de ne ke chu zu mo ne de ma da
so when it talks about virtue is perpetually feeble is that you know whenever we give rise to virtue it's very very weak in this day and age, our virtue, the power of our virtue is very weak, whereas the power of our non-virtue, you know, is very, very strong. You know, like whatever anger we generate and you know, whatever course of action we undertake out of that force of anger is very, very powerful. You know, whatever attachment we generate and whatever course of action we undertake you know, under that influence is very, very powerful. Compared to any kind of virtuous actions that we do.
What did that do? Sanju sent you to Jagalamadil, Lenin, but you want your Sanyan from somewhere, you want Sanyan, Sajatuba. Tambut and Sanju sent to you to Jungalamadil, then Diva Shishi, Divi Le, Shishi, you want your Sanyan to a mother, you want Sanyan to, then the Sanyan Jashi Sajikon, Shita.
In the last story of the Buddha, it talks about when Buddha was about to generate bodhicitta, then he ran into some negative karma that caused him to be reborn in the hell realm. So in the hell realm, there is this very popular story of when they were pulling this in this, this on the red hot iron burning grounds, then you know, that particular life of the Buddha and a friend, they were under this heavy yoke pulling this kind of you know, carriage. And so you know, it was Buddha in that particular life, and then the other friend also was pulling. And so during when he saw, when Buddha saw that, he wasn't Buddha at that time, but when he saw the plight of the other person, he felt so much compassion. And at that moment, he said he offered to bear the burden of that yoke completely himself. And you know, just and in that instant, you know, of feeling that that compassion for the other hell beings' misery. Now, both are going through the same experience, but like, you know, but you know, feeling so much compassion for the plight of the other person that he offered to take the weight of that complete you know, burden of that you know, pulling that carriage upon himself alone. And so you know, when he generates that compassion and that kind of responsibility for the well-being of others, in that instant, he purified the karma, and it became the condition for him to generate bodhicitta. You know, it's, you know, it's, when you generate positive thoughts, like, you know, compassion under such extreme states, then it's very, very powerful like that. No, you have the story of Asanga, who spent 12 years trying to, you know, see Maitreya. And like every, you know, there's this long story, and at the end of 12 years, he didn't get to see Maitreya, and having become totally fed up and given up, he came away from the retreat. And then he chanced upon this, you know, dog, you know, completely, you know, infested with these wounds full of maggots. And then seeing that, you know, Asanga generated such compassion for the dog. And it was the force of that compassion that completely purified whatever remnants of the, you know, negative karmas obscuring him, was completely purified by that force of that compassion. And in that instant, because of that force of compassion, then having purified the last remnants of the obscuring mind, then he was able to see Maitreya.
Lāyī nīmāṅ hāru jīyā gīlā gādhēn shūwa rīs, mā lūk ngā jū shīng tāpa sī mār bē.
So then, after then, you know, having purified, then he saw Maitreya, and then he went to he went with Maitreya to the to the blissful heavens of the Tushita. And according to Asanga, he was supposed to spend one morning receiving teachings, but when he came back to earth,
he was 50 years gone already.
And so then, it was from the series of that morning's teachings in Tushita realm that, you know, Asanga came away to the, you know, to our world and wrote these five texts taught by Maitreya.
So in short,
we say that, you know, there is there's no greater no powerful method than the method of meditating on bodhicitta, you know, for purifying our negative karma. And if one wishes to purify negative karma, then you know, the greatest force to purify that is the love and compassion generating bodhicitta.
And
So the eighth stanza is the main point is that saying that, you know, to purify all our tremendous negative karmas, then the greatest force to do that is cultivating bodhicitta. And the next stanza is saying that, you know, just as I wish for happiness, other sentient beings also wish for happiness. Just as I do not want suffering, other sentient beings also do not want suffering. So therefore, in order to enable the happiness of all sentient beings, and in order to free all sentient beings from their suffering, there is no other method other than the method of generating bodhicitta. Without bodhicitta, you cannot do these things. So that is what it's basically saying in the next verse. All the Buddhas who have contemplated for many eons have seen it to be beneficial, for by it the limitless masses of beings will quickly attain the supreme state of bliss. In order to accomplish the immeasurable well-being of sentient beings, you know, what enables the limitless happiness of sentient beings, immeasurable happiness, in order to accomplish this for sentient beings, what enables us to do this is bodhicitta. It is only bodhicitta which easily allows us to bring forth the immeasurable well-being of all sentient beings. And so, to place sentient beings in every happiness, to free them from every suffering, what enables us to do this is only bodhicitta. So, who has that capacity, who has that potential, is only the enlightened beings. The enlightened beings who have that, potential to do the perfect works for sentient beings, then how they came to be enlightened is through bodhicitta. You know, how Buddhas came about is because of bodhicitta. And so, therefore, one must take the initiative to meditate on bodhicitta. And through bodhicitta, then one can become a Buddha, a state of Buddhahood in which one can accomplish all the perfect welfare for sentient beings. You know, bring forth the happiness of sentient beings and free them from suffering. All the perfect works for sentient beings can be done only in the state of one's Buddhahood. In the state of one's Buddhahood. one is completely prepared. One has the complete capacity or potential for all of this. So this is what it basically is saying in the 8th verse. Those who wish to destroy the many souls of their conditioned system, and those who wish all beings to experience a multitude of joys, and those who wish the experience, and those who wish to experience much happiness, should never forsake the awakening mind. It's just like, if you generate the wish to benefit all the American people, what is this state, which gives you the power, the potential, fully prepares you to fulfill all the welfare of all the American people, is to become president, So to become the president, then you need to go through the schools, the colleges, you go through all the series, and then after you get elected president, then as a president, then you have the power or the potential, you're fully prepared from your side to fulfill the welfare of the American people. So in the same way, when you talk about, fulfilling the welfare of all mother sentient beings, to place them in happiness, to free them from suffering. Who is it that has that potential, that kind of power? Who's prepared for that kind of activity? It's only the Buddhas. And so therefore, to become a Buddha, then what it entails is developing bodhicitta. There are three distinctive types of bodhicitta, that one can generate. One is the bodhicitta like a king, bodhicitta like a shepherd, bodhicitta like a ship's captain. So generating the wish to attain Buddhahood so that one can be of perfect benefit to sentient beings, ultimate well-being, is like the bodhicitta, like a king. If you are a king, then you can serve everybody. So again, the 9th stanza is basically talking about the benefits of generating bodhicitta, and these are the kind of benefits when you study the bodhisattva's path or the paramitayana or the perfection vehicle, paramitayana vehicle, the perfection vehicle. Then the sutras quote these benefits. The moment an awakening mind arises, meaning bodhicitta arises, in those fettered and weak, in the jail of the cycle existence, they will be named a child of the Sugatas and will be revered by both men and gods of the world.
So
And it says, you know, we can generate bodhicitta in any of the six types of existences, in as a being born in any of the in any of the given six realms of existence. You can generate bodhicitta, you know, with the body of a being born in the hell realm. You can generate bodhicitta as a predator being. You can generate bodhicitta as an animal being. You can generate bodhicitta, and needless to mention, for human beings and devas.
It's one of the sutra stories that as Kirsten Chow was saying, how you have bodhisattvas like in the animal, as an animal being, and Kirsten Chow was talking about a rabid bodhisattva. And in sutra you have these stories about, there's one, like one occasion there was a bodhisattva rabbit, and who used to give Dharma teachings to all the animals like that, and it became quite well known, and so people were very curious about this rabbit bodhisattva, so much so even the devas came to check it out, like he doesn't remember who it was, Indra or Brahma, someone came to check it out, check out the bodhisattva rabbit, and then to kind of evaluate. You know, they asked for like food. You know, this, it was Brahma Indra who asked for food, and of course, the Buddha Ravi, he said, you know, said, you know, I only eat, grass, but you probably don't want to eat that, so I give you my body as my food, like that. So then, of course, the devas were very amazed by that kind of the response that the bodhisattva rabbit gave, so they invited him to the deva realm. And so, in other words, it's saying, like, when you often hear lines that say, you know, when you generate bodhicitta in your mind, then you become an object of veneration by all the beings, by all the devas and humans. So you have a rabbit that's venerated by the king of the devas. They are like the top of the celestial beings. And so why is that? Only because of bodhicitta, that, you know, like that. So that was the whole exchange.
So the 10th chapter is again, I mean 10th stanza is again another statement of the benefit of all bodhicitta. It is like the supreme gold-making elixir for it transforms the unclean body we have taken into the priceless jewel of a Buddha form. Therefore, firmly seize this awakening mind.
Here the verse is talking about a special alloy that is able to transform base metal into gold. And this story is also associated with Nagarjuna. You know, Nagarjuna developed this alloy and transform base metal into gold. There's a whole story associated like that. So taking this as an example, this alloy as an example, then, it's a bodhicitta, it's like that, which transforms all our virtues. With bodhicitta, then all our virtues become the cause for enlightenment. When we do virtuous activities with only the thought of renunciation of this subtle existence, then it becomes the cause to attain liberation alone. When we do virtuous activities with the motivation to be free of the low rebirth, we attain higher rebirth. All when that is the motivation with which we do, motivation seeking to be free of lower states of rebirth, then whatever virtues we do becomes causes for higher rebirth. When we do virtuous activities with the intention to attain liberation alone, renunciation alone, then it becomes the cause for that. But with bodhicitta, then all the virtues becomes the cause for enlightenment. So like this alloy that is able to transform base metal into gold, then bodhicitta is what transforms this impure body into the pure holy body of a Buddha. So transforming our impure body into the transforming into the Dharmakaya,
Sambhavakaya, Nimanakaya, you know, the truth body, the perfect enjoyment body, the emanation body. So what enables that is the bodhicitta. We all have within us this Buddha nature, this basic potential to become enlightened. And that Buddha nature exists in all the beings of the six types of existence. But it isn't sufficient just to have this potential to become Buddha. This potential to become Buddha has to be nurtured by the skillful means of the method and wisdom, which employs, you know, meditating on bodhicitta. And it is with this bodhicitta that one is able to transform this ordinary sense of this I into the supreme holy body of the truth body, the perfect enjoyment body, the emanation body, like the alloy that is able to transform base metal into gold, through bodhicitta. Then to the forces of such method and wisdom, one is able to abandon the two types of obscurations and generate one's mind into the omniscient mind, knowing all. So the next stanza basically says that, you know, for those who seek liberation and enlightenment must meditate on the bodhicitta. You know, if one meditates on this well, if one familiarizes with bodhicitta well, then that is what liberates us from our samsaric existence. Since the limitless mind of the sole guide of the world has upon thorough investigation seen its preciousness, all beings wishing to be free from worldly abodes should firmly take hold of the precious awakening mind. The verse 12 is what we already talked about before. All other virtues are like the plantain tree, for after bearing fruit, they simply perish. But the perennial tree of the awakening mind unceasingly bears fruit and thereby flourishes without end. So all other virtuous activities that we undertake brings forth results just one time. Whatever virtues that we undertake, motivated by, brought on by bodhicitta, then the result of that increases more and more.
It's like unceasing.
So in order order to cultivate bodhicitta in us, you know, from the very beginning, we cannot have bodhicitta spontaneously, intuitively, effortlessly there, you know. In the beginning, one has to effortfully create this thought of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is a very contrived effort. And, you know, by understanding what are the facets of the mind of bodhicitta, you know, what are the causes, what are the objectives of the mind of bodhicitta, and understanding these points, then you forcefully create that mind. So, and then become familiar with it.
Deva Shinto Masi Shinayans Pala Tene Deva Chambu Tara Kaala Tene Yuji Junjuwa Tala Pajin Naji Chimitis Deva Shinto Masi Shinayans Pala Tene Deva Chambu Tara Tad Deva Chambu Masi Yata Otele Tachibu Jeva Ina Anu Suzu Jabu Namata Mwacha Chibu Yoshintula Kasubure ที่จ้าจ้าไปยินนะอันนั้นคือจีก่อนหน้าที่จะนั่นคือเนี่ยบ้านแม่ไปสวยกันกันหรอว่าที่ไปจ้าดีสมัยเสร็จเดี๋ยวไปชิมดูมาเสร็จยินนะยังบ้านหลังเต็มเลยเดี๋ยวไปจีบว่าเชื่อมต่อเลยเดี๋ยวไปเชื่อมต่อเลยก่อนหน้าเต็มเลยยืดจีเดือดจีเดี๋ยวไปเจ้าหน้าที่เชื่อมเสร็จพอที่ชั้นจุดเส้นเดี๋ยว
And so the next stanza is using the example of someone who has done a crime and is due for a very heavy punishment. But then this individual seeks out some really powerful individual and gets help. So and so the individual gets absolved of that punishment. You know, like that, then, you know, or bodhicitta, even if we have accumulated the most heinous or most grievous of the negative karmas, but since bodhicitta is such a powerfully and virtuous mind, then you know it frees us from that karma, like that. Just like an individual going to some very powerful individual and you know getting relieved of that particular punishment. So this is what it's talking about in the next verse. Like entrusting myself to a brave man when greatly afraid. By entrusting myself to this awakening mind, I shall be swiftly liberated. Even if I've committed extremely unbearable evils, why then do the conscientious not devote themselves to this?
Sanju sent the Deva Dava Yina, Deva Mabasan Kanada Deva Dava. So Sanju sent Juljong, Deva Mabad and Taza, Tazu Kadera, Kanada Tava, Lava Yina, Dibi Mo Mabad was Saju Maris, Deva Taza. Deva Dungajin in Neva Yuars, Deva Dungajin in Neva Chon Chon Rajavala, Deva Taza Lawuris, Sanju sent Juljong. Debatele, Yamada, Yada, Tunisia, Neva Yoroda, Neva Galiga, Chungus, Chungus, Debatavas.
So, in essence, you know, again, verse 13 is talking about how generating bodhicitta is such a powerful method of purification of our native karmas. Then, when we talk about bodhicitta purifying our negative karmas, how does it purify? It isn't like it makes non-existent the nature of negative karma. It's not like that. But it kind of undermines the potential of that negative karma. What is the potential of a negative karma? The potential of a negative karma is to bring result suffering. So when it gets purified by bodhicitta, then that potential is made weakened, made less, rendered ineffective to bring result suffering. So if a particular negative karma has the potential for, you know, to bring forth the suffering in the hell realm or a hungry ghost realm or an animal realm, so through purification, then that potential for such prospective rebirths are lessened or undermined or rendered ineffective. So when we talk about, purification of negative karma brought on by bodhicitta, what it means is that it weakens that negative karma's potential to bring the result suffering. So take an example, say if we have a negative karma to be reborn in the hell realm 100 times. So by generating bodhicitta, by forcefully creating the thought of bodhicitta, then it makes less, now a purification can make that karma only 90 times you're going to be reborn, or 80 times that one. Like that is how it makes less that potential.
So
this is how you should understand, negative karma becoming purified. It is in this way it is purified. It's like, a grain of rice. If you plant that grain of rice, then it has the, potential to germinate and grow and bring more rice. But if you burn that grain of rice, then, you get rid of the potential for it to ever germinate into a plant or, give rice to, rice grains. So, besides developing our mind in bodhicitta as a way of purifying negative karma, then there are other methods as well. When we meditate on emptiness, when we meditate on the divine holy body of a deity, recite the mantra, do the recitation of the names of the 35 Buddhas, these are all methods of purification. And if you are doing your medicine Buddha retreat and mantra recitation, you are purifying a lot of negative karma. Each time you recite the mantra, you purify a lot of negative karma. And then if you sustain your recitation of the mantra with the thought of bodhicitta, then it purifies even much more. And then if you further sustain this with the view of emptiness, it purifies even much more.
Then the
The next verse also talks about the purifying effects of bodhicitta. Just like the fire at the end of an age, it instantly consumes all great evil. This unfathomable advantages were taught. Its unfathomable advantages were taught to the disciples Sudana by the wise Lord Maitreya. So you talk about the fire that happens during the eon of destruction. The force of that fire is so great, it says that in an instant it is able to bring to ashes even the huge mountains. that is the kind of a fire at the, during the eon of destruction. So, just like that fire, then that is how the force of bodhicitta is able to purify or render ineffective our negative karmas.
That deva dava le nyabu toji samadhu kundos, nyabu toji, nyabu ladhu kaza.
So again, with the practice of purification, it is important that one has all the components of the four opponent powers. You know, the power of regret, the power of the resolution, and the reliances, the refuge in bodhicitta, and the power of the remedy or the antidote, the purification methods that one employs. So if you employ all of these four parts of the for opponent powers for purifying, then it is that there is no negative karma which cannot be purified. So one can be assured that one has an abundant accumulation of negative karma, because we have ignorance, we have attachment, we have anger, we have all of these delusional states of mind, and so we definitely have abundant negative karma to accumulate, not only to purify, not only in terms of what we have accumulated in this lifetime, but from countless previous lifetimes. So when you do purification, then you must have the mind of regret, the power of the mind of regret. Just like when we by mistake take poison, and because we know this poison will bring us so much suffering, then you do everything possible within the shortest period of time to counteract the effects of that poison. In the same way, that is how the power of our regret should be. Understanding that these negative actions have its heavy suffering consequences. So immediately doing everything, it is the power of the regret that moves us to that. Power of the remedy, just like when we take poison by mistake, and then because we understand its effects, so we are moved to take the remedy very quickly, as soon as possible, like that. So it is the power of the regret that moves us to the power of the remedy, utilizing the antidotes of the various purification methods, and then it isn't sufficient that one has just that one generous regret and remedy for it, but also one must have a restrained, the power of the restraint, a resolution, not to undertake them ever again like that. And then and one does all of these on the basis of the reliances, relying on the, the refuge, relying on the bodhicitta like that, as the foundation of one's purification. And then, if one employs these four opponent powers as a means to purification, then even the most heinous of one's negative karmic actions, such as killing one's father and mother, you know, which are regarded as uninterrupted karmas, then even they are purified. When you meditate on emptiness, your negative karmas are purified. Because much of our negative karmas arise out of grasping at true existence. When you recite mantras, negative karma is purified. Whether it is the recitation of the names of the Buddhas or the mantras of the deities of the four classes of Putra, all of these recitations bring forth purification of negative karmas. When you do Vajrasattva, then you purify negative karma. And a recitation of the names of the 35 Buddhas is a way to purify as well. So by reciting the name of the Buddha, the first Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, then it says it purifies, it's a remedy to purify 10,000 or 20,000 eons of negative karma like that. So if you look at the benefits of the recitation of the names of 35 Buddhas, then with each name is like purifying one eon, two eons, or purifying physical negativities, verbal negativities, attachment like that. It specifically purifies negative karmas. So what is the proof that negative karmas can be purified? You have Angulimala. You know Angulimala, the one with the garland of fingers. who during his life, he ended up with a very perverse teacher who taught him his method to liberation was to kill 1,000 people. And so he ended up killing 999. And when he had just one more to go, he found Buddha. The last person he was hoping to kill turned out to be the Buddha. So of course then it became a totally different experience. And so, and Buddha set him on the path. And not only did he not purify all that negative karma, he became an arhat in that lifetime. So many of the great Indian masters like Nagarjuna often tell that story of Angulimala during the time of the Buddha as a classic example of negative karmas being purified totally, and how spiritual realizations are also possible. So if you think like Angulimala could purify such heavy negative karma, then it's the same for us, If you have experienced successful purification practices, sometimes you have very significant dreams. Just like in the dawn part of the night, some of the dreams that you have during that time, such as meeting with your spiritual teachers, eating very eating and drinking, you know, delicious food and drinks, and basically when you wake up, you know, feeling a sense of great joy and bliss are some of the signs of purification. Then take the example of Manirupa, who in the earlier part of his life, you know, brought so much death and destruction on people and animals. Then later part of his life, he met with his teacher Marpa and he attained enlightenment in that lifetime. You know, Milarepa met Marpa, you know, who was such a skillful teacher, and in order to, you know, fast help purify Milarepa's karma, you know, Marpa put Milarepa through many arduous tasks of building and rebuilding many houses, you know. So, you know, whether you do medicine Buddha practices or Tadpai Buddha practices or, you know, recitation of the sutras, whatever virtue you do in life is an antidote to the non-virtue, the negative karma of our non-virtue. So, if we do not purify the negative karma of our non-virtuous activities, then you know what happens is that you experience result suffering, and suffering is what we do not wish for, what we do not want. And so it is for that reason it becomes important to engage in the practices purifying the negative karma of our non-virtuous activities. And so, because of the particular mental capacity of a human rebirth, then we have that capacity to purify negative karma if we engage in the practice. So here Shantideva states, saying, you know, this is in brief the benefits of bodhicitta stated here. But if you want to study very detailed, get detailed information on the benefits of bodhicitta, then you should study this text which talks about Maitreya teaching his disciple Sudana. In that particular text, then you will find the more detailed benefits of the mind of bodhicitta. So in this text by Maitreya, when he taught Sudana, he used 200 examples to illustrate the benefits of bodhicitta. You know, comparing bodhicitta to be like a seed and so forth like that.
What's
So then, you know, although you have just this line mentioned, you know, you have to refer to the other texts of Maitreya where you'll find that information. So, good question and answer. I have one question here from someone. From the perspective of my non-subtle and not tamed mind, my experience is that moments of clarity are very peaceful. In these moments, I can recall a person or situation in which I was having reactive negative thoughts and emotions, and with this peaceful clarity, there is no anger, no enemy, no recalling the object. This type of experience, as brief and infrequent as it may be, at the level of peacefulness and tranquility, is what gives me some basis of experience to have whatever level of belief I have in Nirvana and Buddha nature. Because this is a stronger experience for me than any experience of emptiness, I have naturally wondered what is the purpose of meditation on the conventional nature of the mind with its clarity and awareness, this luminosity one hears of. I think I've had the idea that cultivating clarity could lead to great benefit, possibly and Nirvana. Better said, that meditation on the conventional nature of the mind could lead to Nirvana. Apparently, Lama Tsongkhapa refutes this, and then there is the danger, I suppose, of getting attached to the peacefulness. In looking at your analogies of the striped robe in a dark room, I can see that just turning on the light isn't enough to get rid of the fear. To get rid of fear, one must see no snake, no elephant, or just the room illuminated. So then, what is the purpose of meditation of the conventional nature of the mind? And do the four Tibetan schools see this differently, and if so, why?
Say in short what the question is. last part. So then, what's the purpose of meditation?
Or do you want to make it a more general question, like what is the role of meditating on the conventional nature of mind?
Kunso be simla migni gom jaya junze khari raya sa. Kunso be simla migni gom jaya junze khari raya sa.
Kunso be simla.
Do In the scope of the practices like Dzogchen or Ma Mudra, then you use the mind as your focal object of your meditation. So, or when you first look at the mind, then when you see that empty, clear awareness, then you hold on to that as being the object of your meditation and focus on it. I forgot one point there. In Dzogchen, it's like recognizing the nature of your mind. Recognizing your mind or recognizing the nature of your mind is the way to go about it. So, Kensum was quoting some Nyingma text in which it says, like, primordially, from the very beginning, all beings were enlightened. And, that they are just temporarily, obscured by the delusions. But, from the very beginning, they were, from the very beginning, beings are primordially, from the very beginning, they were all, that they are all enlightened. So, you go by such statements, but it's not very conducive to our way of thinking to have that concept of beings. Being enlightened from the very beginning, like that, we can say, you can say that the mind, that the Buddha nature or that mind, is intrinsically pure. And how is it intrinsically pure? It is intrinsically pure that purity referring to the purity of true existence. Pure from being truly existent. So when when you rest the mind in its natural state,
then it's like empty. You know, it's like a spacious empty. And so, you know, that is what it means to recognize the nature of the mind. So, you know, so this is very much, again, from following some of the Nyingma texts that that Kinsham said he came across, you know, which is a text from Namkhe Nobu that one of the Western students, you know, showed Kinsham Ji. But if you bring together, you know, the great adepts or the great, you know, learned and both learned and you know, accomplished practitioners of Sakya, Nyingma, Kagyu, Gelug, then again, you know, they all come to the same conclusion. It's not like there's difference in them. When we talk about recognizing the mind, then there are many levels at which you recognize the mind, from the gross to the subtle. And when it all boils down to the very subtle mind, then it all boils down to clear light. So when we talk about, you know, the very subtle mind, you have the, you know, the subjective mind, and you have the object of that mind. The subjective mind would be the mind of clear light, and the objective clear light is the emptiness. You know, the non-true existence is the objective clear light, and the subjective clear light is the mind itself realizing that.
Well, that then, guru knowledge then, no, here again, mobile, you are niyaman, you are sajal, you are kaju knowledge, you are this. The moment when it is, jiba is, duchi is, maam is,
so, even though you have different approaches from the different Buddhist Tibetan Buddhist schools of thought, but you know, when it finally arrives at a point of conclusion or destination, then it is the same whether it is from the scope of Dzogchen or great completion or Mahamudra, the great seal, like that. It all comes to the same conclusion, you know, it arrives at the same point. If you read or listen to the teachings of His Holiness on Dzogchen, then it you know, within those teachings of His Holiness, you can see very clearly, you know, how all these different methods or traditions, you know, arrives at the point at the same point of a destination or result. If you ask about the philosophical viewpoints, then all the four main Buddhist traditions of Tibet all say, you know, that they propound the, you know, the Madhyamika precedent system. So, you know, from a philosophical viewpoint, it's all the same.
You know, that is the
Yeah. So, but of course, you know, you have to examine that view for yourself. It's okay. It's not so much, but anyway. I'm pointing towards the building.
I think it was on the first day that Rinpoche mentioned that even when the even though the karma is finished, the obscuration remains after it. Did I hear that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So I'm wondering what the relationship.
Even if the karma is finished?
The obscuration remains.
Yeah? Sina le di zobi na le di tibadi tumasa tumatayo resa. Did resa. Chidan tena led sabra. The led saya led sabra. The di led sabe tibio chawa did hadio la.
A Jesus and the Margaretta, your move more than I on your move
Sabin Ha.
Pachad, Pachad is a mother. You move Pachad is worse. Your move on your move Sabin.
You can say like if you talk about abandoning delusions, you have if you say you have abandoned delusions, it requires that you abandon even the seeds of the delusions. And seeds of the, seeds meaning imprints of the delusions. And so imprints of the delusions are regarded as obscuration to knowledge or obscuration to omission. So you have as Arhan, abandoned delusions but yet to abandon the imprints of those delusions.
And so then my question is, when we're doing purification for to purify the result of karmic action, are we at the same time addressing those obscurations, or does that come later when you realize
something? The answer, Shakwa in the Chiduganya, the Devu Taya Chidu, Shakwa Chiwa. Lady Devu Tavrachne, Lady Kengi, and Chigio, Tibiochala, Tibachiola, Dita Warres.
Diva doesn't that the region of Nevadu?
Dita
Nevad Kalikas Chung Rultas. Zola can shut off Bevadinos, doesn't have to root to Jule and Tabo more.
Just said like when we talk about purification, when you do your purification practices, as we explained earlier, what it means to purify is diminishing the potential of the result suffering. So it's like when you wash your clothing, at the beginning, the dirt that it gets rid of, when you put the clothing into the cycle for washing, at the beginning, it only gets rid of the gross ones. Mm-hmm. And then later on, as you, keep on with the washing and like that, then it gets get rid of the more, subtle ones, like that. And so, in the scope of the path, even though you have purified a particular karma,
But, you know, because you still have the imprint of that karma, then it acts as a, like an obstacle on the path.
May the Spirit of the Church be on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pass with my completely all other hindrances, grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable, and their being on action spread and direction. May the light of most humble teachings
especially as the last year.